Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the Elevated Places Network. We are so blessed and feel so grateful and humbled that you have chosen to spend this evening with us, this Thursday, the 13th day of January. I can't believe it is 2022. And I am happy to be joined. Isn't there something? Happy to be joined tonight by my illustrious co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, our executive producers making everything happen, Sister Rona Muhammad, our legal contributor, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad. And we are really honored to have with us tonight in the main portion of our program. We will be joined by author, NOI research team member, student minister, Brother Dimitri Muhammad, who has been with us on this program before and is one of the most prolific writers and researchers in the Nation of Islam, a very powerful speaker as well. So we look forward to him joining us to discuss the cover of this week's Final Call newspaper, The Last Days of Dr. King. Saturday will be the birth anniversary of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And so we're going to have a thorough discussion about him. I know that you are reading the COVID section on depopulation of the Final Call newspaper. It is so powerful. And this week we opened with an article by another member of the NOI research team, Brother Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. A brand new healthcare system will emerge from the rubbish of COVID-19. And he does extensive interviews with our two wonderful, dedicated, brilliant physicians in the Nation of Islam, Sister Dr. Safiya Shabazz and Sister Dr. Darnita Muhammad, who between them, I think they have successfully treated more than 1,500 patients during this pandemic, and they're continuing as I speak. So with that, we got a lot to do this evening, and I know Brother Terrence is going to get us in motion. So with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Brother Terrence.
All right. Well, we are here once again. It is Thursday night. It is the second show of 2022, which is absolutely amazing. And I can't believe it. I mean, we are already in 2022. And it's very interesting, Dr. Ava, because there's so much going on. And as we were watching, it's This whole pestilence from heaven, as the minister told, I remember 2021, and we kept encouraging every show to go back to listen to the address by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, July 4th, 2020, The Criterion. And we mentioned that lecture over and over and over again. I'm still going to mention that lecture because what we are seeing now with this issue of COVID-19, the widespread and how it's affecting everyone, and it's very much so necessary that we follow those instructions of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and get your subscription to the Final Call newspaper, finalcalldigital.com, finalcalldigital.com, or get the hard copy. Get that what you can put in your hand from the brothers that you see in your community, because we need to get them information that is in that COVID-19 section and learn about what we can do to not only help boost our immune, but learn how to eat to live as we're living in this time and day and time in 2022. Like I said last year, people thought 2021 was the remix of 2020, and now I just say 2022 may be the long extended version or the B-side of the album of this situation that we're living in. So we must be making sure that we are healthy, and not only ourselves healthy, as they say on the plane, please put on your mask before assisting someone else. So let's get ourselves together and make sure that our family and community have what they need to make sure that they are staying healthy and alive during this period of time that we're living. And so with that, we also want to encourage those not only to continue to hear the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, come with us every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. and join us in our self-improvement class so we can help to improve ourselves, which is the basis for our community development at 7:30 p.m. NOI.org. And come back for a Sunday lecture, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern at NOI.org, and Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. same place, NOI.org. And if you did not know, today our sister Kahara had her janaza, the daughter of student minister Nuri Muhammad and his wife, Sister Terry Muhammad. And by the grace of Allah, our brother, student minister Jeffrey, gave the janaza. And as he announced, our beloved student national assistant to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, student minister Ishmael Muhammad, had tested positive for COVID, but he is okay. As our student minister Jeffrey said, he is okay. And he said, but his heart goes out because he wanted to be there for his brother. And as he shared at the janaza, that Brother Nuri is love all in Naptown, Indianapolis, and the line was long just to come shake his hand and show their love, and they had to cut it. But it was a beautiful janaza, and it literally was that. He gave the word, and the word was spoken, and you can go watch that on NOI.org, and I know it has been put up on YouTube as well. As we continue to go on, Dr. Ava, we also I'm just looking at the things that are going on. We had President Biden, Kamala Harris in Atlanta the other day talking about voting rights, and Al Sharpton was there, and the civil rights leader. And, you know, it's an interesting thing that we're still fighting for something that we said that we have already gained, that we fought and bled, and we died on Edmund Pettus Bridge and Selma and all of the different things that we have struggled through, but all of the rights that we say that we're getting in the legislation and voting for things that we need, they're always going and turning them back, or as they did with the voting rights, gutted it out. But that's still going on today, and sisters and brothers are fighting. I'm in a fight with my organization. We're trying to talk about canceling student debt. President Biden's for being canceled, 10,000. Then they're saying we want 50,000, but students are saying we want all of it canceled, as you
That's
did
right.
with the trillions of dollars that you did with the billionaires and their debt in Wall
Come
Street.
On.
Why can't you cancel student debt, which will decrease or shorten, yes, which will shorten the wealth gap. You know, and generational gap in the black community. So, you know, we got a lot going on with that. And there were some other things I can't pull up in my head right now that just happened. And our brother Infume passed away, great radio host and activist. We wanted to remember him, and I know there was a thing that was released, an old radio show that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was on. Someone had replayed the interview that he was on with our brother. And I think there was a YouTube video where Student Minister Akbar was giving some history of our brother and what he meant in the movement. And we're losing a lot of our legends, our greats. And,
yeah.
We, you know, as we say today, is that we want to have not only remembering, but we want to give them their flowers while they live. So not only those that are our, amongst us that are our stars, but we want to start giving the flowers, as our brother Student Minister Jeffrey said, giving those flowers to one another while we live, showing the love to one another while we're alive, and not come out and express deep heartfelt love that maybe they never knew why they was amongst us. So we want to show that love to one another as we can, as often as we can today. So with that being said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get us back because we are in that season, Dr. Ava. You know, this is the MLK starts us off early for Black History Month because this is the first official something black in the year before we get to February. And there's so much to talk about. And we want to thank, as I close, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And we don't want to ever forget 10-10-15 because it was during 10-10-15 that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan brought up the words and the teachings of our brother Martin Luther King Jr., and brought the strong teaching, the revolutionary teaching that was withheld from us, that was hidden from us, so we got the watered-down part of him and not the evolution part beyond the 5 years after I Have a Dream, as they call it, speech, which it was never called I Have a Dream. But it's a lot going on, Dr. Ava, around the area of education. And we're also still looking at the things that are going on with the economics because of COVID. And I also would say make sure that we're storing up our foods and getting prepared for that which is coming in this hour that we're living in. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over. And if the other parts come back to my mind, I will make sure I bring it up. Oh, I do want to close out that we want to remember another killing, Jason Walker is his name, in Fayetteville, North Carolina, was just killed recently, shot 4 times in the back. And so there's movement going on the national scene and the local scene. Our sister Tamika Mallory picked it up and started putting it out as she got word from our sister, Sister Naj Taha, who started to reach out to me, reach out to other people, and Ben Crump has come on. So once again, another killing of a black man in our country. So more information on that will be coming soon. So back to you, Dr. Ava.
Yes, sir. And I think were we aware when we did the program last week that Sidney Poitier had passed away, and we mentioned it?
I'm not sure if we did or not. I can't remember if we did or not, but yes, we.
Yes, sir. Well,
we definitely need a butcher.
Yes, sir. We did lose a giant in the performing arts and a legend and a person that broke many racial barriers and was much admired by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so at the age of 94, last Thursday, Sidney Poitier passed away at the age of 94, and he was the first black person to win the Oscar, the Academy Award, for Best Actor in a Leading Role.
Right.
He was a mentor and guide for the acting careers of such legends as Denzel Washington and If you check your final call newspaper, you'll see
a
very well done article by Sister Nisa Islam Muhammad and Sister Tariqa Muhammad. So just wanted to mention our brother. Yes, sir.
No, go ahead. I'll let you finish that, Dave.
Well, I was going to shift over to the Ahmaud Arbery murderers getting their sentence, which is we talked about at the time of their conviction, but they did get sentenced to life in prison.
Right. And it's very interesting. It was life plus 20, which is a beautiful thing.
Yes, sir.
But even with
sir.
You know, people are still saying that, you know, that was like, you know, it's almost like you want to form a clap, but it's like your hands get close to clapping. It's like, okay, that's how many trials that got, you know, sentenced and got some sentences out of how many that we haven't. But it's a form of, some would say, you know, justice, and we happy. We just got to make sure that, one, we are not being killed. That's why we need to separate. And, two, that more of these things, we get justice for those that are being killed. And I was going to go back to our brother Sidney Poitier, as him and Harry Belafonte, that actually needs to be an actual conversation about what they really did behind the scenes and the influence they had in the civil rights movement, using their ability and their fame and their resource to
and
help in the civil rights. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And their resources and money to help fund, to fly people, to pay for hotels, to pay for the bells out. And they did a whole lot. Not only did they use their voice and their platform, but they also used their money. And I say that as we're looking at some of our giants and some of our superstars and what they can do and what they have do. Some are doing it not always publicly, but some are doing it privately, but we want to make sure that we understand that our artist community back then was also connected to the movement and still are.
Yes,
and Harry Belafonte is still working.
That's right. Yes, he is. All praises due to Allah. Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Brother Terrence. And so
yes,
we're going
ma'am.
To move to our very important, and the listeners look forward every week to hearing from the host of A Time for Justice, our own sister attorney, Pamela Muhammad, and I think she's got some breaking news for us. Our legal contributor, who, along with her own program, always finds time from her busy schedule to be with us on Elevated Places. As-salamu alaykum, Sister Pamela.
Well, alaykum salam, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad and Brother Terrence Muhammad. As-salamu alaykum to you, sir. Yes, ma'am. And it is, yes, sir. And it is just a pleasure, and I'm humbled as always to be allowed to come on the Elevated Places with you, Sister Ava. So let me just, this breaking story, of course, is that the Supreme Court has blocked the Biden virus mandate for large employers, and that is breaking news. It happened today, Thursday, and as reported in the New York Times, the Supreme Court on Thursday blocked what they call the Biden administration, and I was going to say the Biden administration mandate, but they blocked the Biden administration from enforcing a vaccine or testing mandate for large employers. And it's interesting because I took some of the opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States, and I wanted to read it to us real briefly. So what has happened is that the applicants sought emergency relief from the court, the Supreme Court. And these applicants were some businesses and some states, because they argued that the OSHA mandate exceeded its authority and is otherwise unlawful. And the applicants argued that they were likely to prevail in the court below, and so that they needed that mandate stayed, which means that it would be stops for, you know, throughout the litigation. And so it, the Supreme Court went on to say that it is likely that the applicants are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim that the Secretary of Labor lacked authority to impose the mandate. Yeah. The Supreme Court also said that permitting OSHA, and that is the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, permitting OSHA to regulate the hazards of daily life simply because most Americans have jobs and face those same risks while on the clock would significantly expand OSHA's regulatory authority without clear congressional authorization. Also, the Supreme Court said we are told by the states, and they're saying that it doesn't justify withholding relief because the Supreme Court went on to say we are told by the states and the employers that OSHA's mandate will force them to incur billions of dollars in unrecoverable compliance costs and will cause hundreds and thousands of employees to leave their jobs. So finally, I just want to repeat that the Supreme Court of the United States held that the OSHA's COVID vaccination and testing order is stayed, meaning that it cannot be implemented. It's stayed pending the disposition of the applicants' petitions for reviews. And so I just kind of wanted to give some of the verbiage from that order from the United States Supreme Court today. So that's the breaking news that I wanted to report on.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
All praises be to Allah. So we, you know, we just have to take this thing one day at a time. But the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was the first and only person to stand up with force and say before the vaccines were even deployed not to take them. And that created a flurry of activity, thought, pushback by many others in the medical, health profession, legal profession, social activists, and so on, who were also against it, but they didn't have an outlet. And the minister opened that door for all of these fights that you are seeing taking place. And so that's a step certainly in the right direction. And we really appreciate that, Sister Pamela. Did you have any more comments on the decision or what we could look forward to from here, or should we just wait it out?
No, ma'am. One thing I just wanted to say was that, so we're clear, as we know, President Biden, he announced this plan for Americans to be vaccinated, requiring them back September 9th, 2021. And so as we know, that order was issued like about 2 months after his announcement. So here we are in the Supreme Court at January 2022. Just given a timeline of how it has evolved. So, yes, ma'am, that's it.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am.
And he persists in efforts to force this unlawful, illegal. First of all, you're dealing with what remains an experimental vaccine that has never been subjected to the proper sequence of testing, and keep in mind, it's only been in use for a year, and a year is not even sufficient to get through phase one of trials when you're developing vaccines that can take 8 to 10 to 15 years in development. And so the idea that you can tell me that if I don't do this, I can't get on an airplane, I can't go to school, and of course there are still plans, and we have to talk about them soon on one of our programs. There are still plans to incarcerate and to hold against our will, those of us that refuse to take this vaccination. So again, separation is the best and only solution. Now, I don't, oh, here he is. I do see Brother Dimitri. He's joined us. So I think that now that our student minister, Brother Dimitri Muhammad, who, as we mentioned earlier, is a prolific author and is a member of the Nation of Islam research team, is going to share his insight, which is always brilliant. And tonight we're talking about the last days. I know all of you have your Final Call newspaper. You should have both, but you should have either the hard copy or your digital copy. And this week's issue, that's right, this week's issue, The Last Days of Dr. King, Why the Drum Major for Justice Was Targeted, Rejected, and Denied in the Final Months of His Life as He Refused to Ignore America's Violence Around the World. Why isn't this story of the civil rights leader taught? And so it is with great pleasure always to hear from our brilliant brother, Brother Student Minister Dimitri Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Dimitri.
Wa alaikum salam, Minister Ava. Can you hear
How
me?
How are you, sir? I can. Yes, sir. Yeah, you sound very clear.
Praise be to Allah. I'm fine by Allah's grace and mercy, and just very happy and very honored to be with you on the great elevated places tonight with your wonderful staff and beautiful audience. So I'm very, very honored to be with you tonight. Thank you.
Oh, praise be to Allah. And of course, you know, you're always someone who generates a lot of response. You know, we got pretty much a full board tonight, a lot of callers waiting to hear from you. Yes, sir. So I want to, unless Brother Terrence has something specific to start with, I certainly want to give the microphone over to you. As Brother Terrence reminded me, on top of everything else, you're in Memphis, okay?
Right.
And so it's like an up-close, personal type of exposure to this history that white America has tried to bury, as they do with all of our black leaders. And more than any one, it has been the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who has, you know, lifted up the names and the histories and the contributions of all of our brilliant and brave leaders, none of whom were perfect, all of whom, like us, are flawed. But he has done so much to overcome the division that the enemy has created by trying to make us into these little groups and cults and sects that follow this one or that one and reject the other. And I really thank you, Brother Dimitri, for all that you've done. Of course, the series Invincible Truth is priceless. The collection of those articles from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Pittsburgh Courier and many of our black publications that during the 1950s and 60s were the sole means by which the word could be gotten out. But let me stop running my mouth and turn the mic over to you.
Well, Minister Ava, thank you so much once again, and I can only echo, you know, your sentiments regarding the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and him giving to this generation of our people a new and true view of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., because the enemy of our people sought to co-opt Dr. King's legacy, and in many ways has been to a certain extent successful in doing that. But the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has made Dr. King a beloved figure among so-called revolutionaries, the nationalist community, and most importantly, students and followers of the life-giving teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the minister has done this by helping us to draw a window around the life of Dr. King, not 1963 and before that, but most importantly, 1963 and beyond, to his unfortunate assassination, as you mentioned, in this city in which I reside, Memphis, Tennessee. And I think that all of the writers who wrote in this week's beautiful edition of The Final Call did a magnificent job of giving to our community and the readership beyond our community a view of Dr. King that I like to say falls within the category of hidden history. And of course, in thinking about Dr. King, his legacy, and thinking about Dr. King, his value and his importance, I certainly, my mind goes to what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote to the early student ministers class in the Nation of Islam during the 1930s about the value and the importance of history, because Dr. King is an example, and what has happened to Dr. King's history is an example of the corruption of Black history, not the true telling of Black history that those of us who are alive today might be motivated and inspired to continue on our leg of the race, taking the baton from our great ones of times past, but a corruption of Black history such that when we look at our great ones from bygone generations, we kind of look at them as symbols. We look at them and put them on a pedestal, and oftentimes the history of our enemy that he gives to us is a history that seeks to highlight their human frailty. And in many ways, in my humble view, what has happened to the histories of Black leaders is analogous to what the biblical writers did to the histories of God's prophets. The biblical writers did to the histories of God's prophets things that added to their noble name and reputation sordid details that are unbecoming of servants of Allah. When Allah revealed the Holy Quran, he has to emphasize that all of his prophets were sinless, because the biblical writers had tried to present the prophets of God and a bunch of sins associated with their name. And in modern day and time, I don't care if you're talking about Dr. King, Malcolm X, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Fannie Lou Hamer, Paul Robeson, the list goes on and on. When our enemy tells their history, it's always some version of their history that seeks to demagnetize them, especially from the millions of Black youth who would be drawn to them and decide to get involved in the movement for freedom, justice, and equality. I just wanted to read this quote from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad because I think it just highlights the importance of history, true history, and accurate history. And he says, first, history is above all our study, the most attractive and best qualified to reward our research as it develops the springs and motives of human actions. and displays the consequence of circumstances, which operates most powerfully on the destinies of the human being. Second, it stands true that we, the lost found nation of Islam in the wilderness of North America, have not applied ourselves to the study of history, but rather to folly, having a lots of the bread of idleness. And when an effort was made to the above effect of history study, it was to our detriment by not knowing what history that was more valuable to aid us in the knowledge of our own nation. The wise man is the one who has made a careful study of the past events of ancient and modern history. The knowledge of the future is judged by the knowledge of the past. There are men born with a gift of prophecy, while some are trained into that knowledge by an intense study of past events of history. So getting the story right with respect to the life and the work of Dr. King is so important, especially in this current season where there appears to be young brothers and sisters who are awakening and who are involving themselves in the struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. And so I think, again, the writers of The Final Call have done a wonderful job in this edition. Sister Anissa, Brother Richard, is certainly the centerfold of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, has done a wonderful job in presenting our brother in such a magnificent way and giving to us a perspective that allows us to see him not as the dreamer of 1963, but as an awakened man who began to abandon what J. Edgar Hoover called his obedience to white liberal doctrines. When J. Edgar Hoover talked about those whom he viewed as candidates for the role of black messiah, when he got to discussing Dr. King, he said Dr. King could be the black messiah, but only if he abandoned his obeisance to white liberal doctrines. Now that's very, very extraordinary statement, because oftentimes in the language of the 60s, white liberal was a dog whistle for the term Jew. So that Hoover saw Dr. King as talented, as magnetic, as a spiritual man, that his only missing quality was that he's under the influence of white ideas. So to me, once again, the Dr. King from 1963 to 1968 is all the more important, because we see him drifting away. We see him walking away, abandoning his former union with ideas that did not originate among our people, but originated among our oppressors. So this edition of The Final Call is extraordinarily important, and it fits with what Professor Don Wycliffe stated. Don Wycliffe was a journalism professor, and he was a editor for the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Daily News. He worked at the New York Times, Chicago Sun-Times. But he said something in the aftermath of the Million Man March that's very relevant. He said this. He said, not since the death of Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968 has black leadership spoken in a genuine, effective way to the souls of black folk. Not, that is, until October 16th and the Million Man March. The genius of the event, which is to say the genius of Louis Farrakhan, who conceived it, was to couch its purpose within religious terms, atonement, reconciliation, recommitment to God, women, family, and community. In so doing, he spoke to the souls of black folk in a way that not even Jesse Jackson had managed to do in the 27 years since Dr. King's death. In so doing, he transformed the Million Man March into an occasion for refusing a severed cord, for reconnecting with the hopeful, faith-filled religious tradition that King represented and that seemed to fall into decay after his murder. I am convinced that this aspect, as much as anything else, accounted for the huge turnout and the undeniable success of Minister Farrakhan and the Million Man March. So in other words, and this is an extraordinary statement, because everyone looks at Minister Farrakhan as the continuation of the work of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But what Professor and editor Don Wycliffe is saying is that, lo and behold, hold the phone, stop the presses, Louis Farrakhan is also the continuation of the work of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So to see what the final call has prepared this edition, it just fits, because the minister, you know, we in the ministry, Minister Ava, we like to say, and it's true, that the minister is a man who is written of in the volume of the book, because there are aspects of his life that intersect with the history of the prophets and messengers of God. But we could also say that he's a man written of in the volume of the book of black history, because the greatest of our people, the greatest of our leaders, find their continuation in his person and in his work. So I didn't mean to go that long, but, you know,
no, this is
you passed the mic to a preacher, so I apologize.
From Memphis.
Too much time. Exactly, from Memphis, Brother Terrence.
Right, that's South.
Exactly.
No, I'm captivated. I am captivated. Yes, sir.
No. I think Brother Demetri for setting a platform, kind of overview of how to get into this discussion, because, you know, the narrative, you know, has been skewed of Martin Luther King. And, you know, the reality is, I'm kind of going to jump a little bit, is that we talk today of Martin Luther King as someone great, as someone who we love from the black community and white community. But historically, when we go back into that time frame and that time period, not white or black, it was not these large numbers that supported Martin Luther King, black or white. Because some blacks was like, you're causing too much trouble, you're upsetting white folks, why are you doing this? Why have you come into our city to do these marches and these rallies? They were not supportive of Martin Luther King. And of course, you know, at the time, the white people saw you as the number one anti-Semitic person, as a Martin Luther King. Now, how can you consider him that if he wasn't someone who was radical and someone who was very, you know, going against the status quo? Like I said, as we learn more and more about his speeches 5 years after the 63, but we already know that's a whole nother conversation about the 63 speech that he made. But I just want to be clear, because when Brother Demetri laid that history, we really got to know how did people really see Martin Luther King versus how they're portraying him now and have put him up, just as now people are trying to love Malcolm X when they didn't love him then, and white folks never loved him and actually plotted, our enemy plotted and did kill Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. So let's not listen to the story of our enemy as they're celebrating, because we even had a fight to even have the quote-unquote holiday remembrance for Martin Luther King Jr. So this didn't happen as we look at it, that this is this wonderful man that the whole world now loves.
Mm-mm. Yes, sir. That's an excellent point. We have a history as a people of I remember the minister saying in a lecture, we love the dead. And
it's
only after, to your point, you know, after someone is gone and years after they're gone, do we come out of the shadows with the approval of white people and pay some measure of respect? Because you're right, Brother Terrence, that's lost. Because what city in America doesn't have a Martin Luther King Boulevard, Martin Luther King Avenue? But I remember the story of Dr. King going down to Mobile, Alabama, when he was traveling around the country and going down there to talk to black people and being met at the little airport by a group of black preachers who told him to get back on the plane and go back to wherever he came from, because he was not welcome in Mobile, Alabama. And you know, it's amazing what you just said, Brother Dimitri, about us tending to, you know, see the minister from a scriptural standpoint, the comparison to how there's this meeting of his work and with the work of the prophets and he being the culmination. But we're living this almost indescribable, beautiful process that Allah is causing to happen, where all of our black leaders who suffered, every one of them, and that's just the ones we know. I mean, the untold suffering among our people on a daily level, daily basis since 1555 is just untold. But, you know, going back to 2013 and this article in the paper also, where the editors lifted and gave us some excerpts from the time and what must be done. In 2013, where the minister is explaining to the viewers that no, he's Dr. King is not a dreamer, and I'm looking at his language. He said, "You may think that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is a dreamer. I beg to differ with you. The dream that Martin Luther King had in 1963 that he spoke of at the base of the Lincoln Memorial, the man wasn't dreaming when he made a speech. And the title of the speech was The Crisis in America's Cities, an analysis of social disorder and a plan of action against poverty, discrimination, and racism in urban America." And the minister said this plan was presented by Dr. King to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Atlanta, Georgia, August the 15th, 1967, less than a year before he was assassinated. And then the final call gives you how you can get this speech. And in it, the famous words of that the minister gave to us from Dr. King, and he said, he read from Victor Hugo, "If the soul is left in darkness, sins will be committed. The guilty one is not he who commits the sin, but he who causes the darkness. The policymakers of the white society have caused the darkness. They created discrimination. They created slums. They perpetuate unemployment, ignorance, and poverty. It is incontestable and deplorable that Negroes have committed crimes, but they are derivative crimes. And the minister said, what did he mean, derivative? Dr. King goes on to say, these crimes are born of the greater crimes of white society. And, of course, you know, we can go and read this, and we can also go back and get this part 23 of the time and what must be done. And I fast forward to the COVID-19 pandemic and Minister Farrakhan challenging white America. You know, Negroes let white media say, oh, black people have preconditions. You know, they have kidney
right.
disease and obesity
right.
and diabetes and heart disease. And they're just so and they say it in a way that suggests we're just inferior inherently.
And
Negroes run around like parrots repeating that. You know, we have preconditions. and the minister had to stand up and say, who put us in this condition?
That's right.
That's right. That's right.
And just, you know, this little excerpt from what Dr. King said in 1967, white people aren't playing that at all. You know, they have all the breakfasts across the country every year. They'll be having them all this weekend and Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Are you coming to the Dr. King commemoration and this and that? And they'll get up and they will quote, I have a dream. And they will put emphasis on the effort to integrate. But that's the man they decided they weren't going to tolerate him living another year.
Right. That's right.
No, you're so right, Minister Ava. That, you know, once again shows the minister being the true caretaker of Dr. King's legacy. Because I had never heard any, number one, you know, I remember being very, very young and always associating the NAACP with Dr. King. You know, I never even knew that it was actually the SCLC that was Dr. King's organization. And you never really hear him, any of his speeches where he's speaking to them or speaking on their behalf. So for him to speak like that, we understand more of why the government and those who were working with them and for them wanted to have Dr. King eliminated, because they were, if you will remember some of the context, they were trying to get Dr. King to speak out against a lot of the young people who were rioting in the streets, whose protests became violent. And Dr. King refused to condemn the youth. And so he begins to cite Victor Hugo, you know, when darkness is created, crimes will be committed. The guilty one is not the one who commits the crimes, but the one who created the darkness. And they went on to point the finger at white America for creating darkness and then expecting black people to dwell peacefully in a morally, economically, and spiritually darkened environment. And so this is not the 63 dreamer. This man's words are more analogous to that of Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad,
right.
Stokely Carmichael,
yes.
those who were uncompromising with white America and them steering us in a direction where we would never receive the very thing that we were seeking to receive, which is justice, freedom, and equality. And that goes back to this idea of our leadership being beholden to ideas and doctrines that are not organically ours, but have been imposed upon us. And I believe Dr. King was beginning to see the futile nature of pursuing integration. And as the minister again, the minister had to tell us, you know, we didn't get it from ABC, CBS, or NBC. We didn't get it from the Ford Foundation or the Kennedy Honors Program. We had never heard it that Dr. King told Harry Belafonte, Harry, I believe we're integrating our people into a burning house.
Come on.
Well, this is a king that we've never been introduced to before, and the only way we were introduced to him is from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Again, the front cover of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's famous book, The Fall of America. There are flames. There's a graphic depiction of flames on that cover. And so, you know, to see that on the cover of The Fall of America, A Burning America, The Fall of America, and then to hear Dr. King telling Harry Belafonte, him being melancholy, while Harry and others were excited, you see, and they're wondering, man, why is Dr. King so melancholy? We're winning. And when they probed him, he said, you know, this isn't really a victory. We're sending our people into a burning house. This is an extraordinary statement that, again, shows that there was a confluence of forces bringing together two men that at one point in time appeared to be polar opposites. But time and circumstances and events, and I would add the will of God, was bringing Dr. King and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad together. And in February of 66, they come together. And I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a photo that circulates a lot in social media, but it's it's one of the photos of Dr. King and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad meeting. And it has Coretta Scott King, and there's another brother there. I forget his name. I think he was an attorney. And the thing that always makes me smile whenever I see that photo is that, number one, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad looked very happy to meet Dr. King. And the next most happiest person in the photo was Coretta Scott King. She has a huge smile on her face as her husband and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are coming together. And, you know, as we say in the study of history, you know, we can only speculate. But I like to believe that because her husband was under such great danger doing the work that he was doing, and Dr. King even talked about how he would receive dozens of phone calls at his personal home every day with white people calling him, telling him, nigga, we're going to kill you. Nigga, we're going to burn your house down. Nigga, we're going to kill your family. To me, I believe that Coretta Scott King saw in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and in the fact that her husband was having his first meeting with Mr. Muhammad, I believe she saw that there would be help and protection for her husband and her husband's life and their life, because everybody could see that the Muslims look out for their own.
That's right.
Of course, Stokely Carmichael famously talked about how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad ordered his followers to protect his life when he would go in different cities where his followers were. And so we will never know what would have come out of the blossoming or the flowering of that relationship between the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King. But, you know, these two sons of the state of Georgia, these two sons of preachers, these two men who sincerely love their people. You know, Chuck D and Public Enemy many years ago, Brother Terrence, did a song called Brothers Gonna Work It Out, you know.
That's right.
I just like to believe that these two brothers were on the path to working out something that Dr. King coined a phrase called operational unity. And he started talking less about integration and more about operational unity, you see. Now, what would that have done for Black America to see Dr. King and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in a formal compact, in a formal agreement? Fact about it, when they met, newspapers were reporting that they had agreed to work together against poverty in the inner city. So you know how relationship building goes. Well, we start with one initiative. Let's see how that works out. If that proves to be successful, then we can go a step further. If that proves to be successful, we can go a little bit further.
That's right.
Hand in hand down the road together as brothers, bringing our massive followings together, giving to Black America that which has always and frequently is so elusive, and that is the ability to unite irrespective our religious beliefs, irrespective of our geographic boundaries, irrespective of all of the artificial differences that are so convenient means to keep us from uniting. To think that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King were on the path of unity. Once again, that's not something that you will see on no Dr. King Day celebration anywhere. You will not see any photo of him and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You won't hear much of his speech at Riverside Church in Los Angeles. You won't hear much about his stance against the war in Vietnam. You certainly won't hear about his call for economic boycott of white America and how he talked about a redistribution of the pain. You see, what we're going to get ready to see on Monday and this weekend is a sanitized version.
Go ahead.
And an attempt to demagnetize Dr. King from young people who are possessed of a revolutionary, and I would add to that, I'm possessed of a messianic spirit, that they're not interested in business as usual. And if you give them the 63 Dr. King, they reject that Dr. King. But if you give them the Dr. King that Minister Farrakhan has reintroduced to us, that 1963 to 1968 Dr. King, then Dr. King now joins the pantheon of great Black revolutionary leaders who inspire young people to take direct action. And again, I think the final call is such a valuable tool in presenting Dr. King, the Dr. King that the youth of today and those who yearn for justice can appreciate and admire.
Yeah, that's oh my God, that's so beautiful. You know, you're making me think about Study Guide 12, I think it is, in the revelatory course, Self-Improvement, the Basis for Community Development, where the minister delineates the four great impediments to self-development. And we tend to really focus most heavily on racism. We're starting to give more attention to sexism. But the two things we don't really talk about much are materialism, which is the worship of matter, and nationalism. And, you know, if we don't understand what the minister's talking about when he refers to nationalism as an impediment to self-development, because we are the nation of Islam. But the nation of Islam is global, universal, and embraces all of the members of the human family.
That's right.
But nationalism, as it's been manifested in this 6,000-year cycle, since the coming of the Caucasian on the planet, it has a different meaning. And nationalism is a phase of development that you go through. It's like other things in life. There are seasons. And,
right.
You know, there's a certain type of behavior that's appropriate. I have a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old. She just turned 5, and a 6-year-old grandson and granddaughter. There's a set of behaviors that they may be permitted to display because of their tender age that we couldn't display as adults. Okay, it's inappropriate. It's out of sync. It's a sign of immaturity. It's a sign of arrested development. And this is another amazing divine achievement of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. This one man has accomplished so much for humanity, we can't comprehend it. But it's, you know, I just look at little pieces of things and I'm like, I don't even occupy a fraction of what he's doing in my little segment of representing some of his work. But one of the things we don't really appreciate, and Brother Suminister Dimitrik's bringing it out, and that is his ability to correct history, to bring the truth. And similarly, he's getting us past nationalism, you know, because when I came in the nation, young Muslim, I came up, I was in high school, you know, during the so-called Black Power movement, you know, and you know, SNCC and Kwame Ture, who was then Stokely Carmichael, and the Panthers.
That's right.
And the way these entities develop, you rejected everything else outside of your little sphere. And as Brother Dimitrik's saying, you know, even in the nation, we had a dim view of Dr. King until the minister enlightened us.
That's right. Okay,
even though
That's
I grew
right.
up as a child with, you know, my parents were playing like these 8-track tapes of Dr. King's speeches. So I'm hearing this as a child, but when I became a teenager, and then somebody gave me a copy of the autobiography of Malcolm X, you know, and then I started shunning what I looked at as weak, you know,
exactly.
The minister said it right. You know, this is not a dreamer, because that's what we condemn. I have a dream.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, but it's a demonstration of maturity on a divine level, and nobody else among us has given us that, us meaning Black folks. Nobody's teaching us and revealing these things to us but this one man.
And, you know, and it's powerful that you said it, Dr. Ava, because one of the things, the narrative, like you said, we, through Minister Farrakhan, see Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. totally different, because when Brother Demetrius brought up, in which we, you know, sometimes we get to attribute it, that when the minister brought up, we need to do as Martin Luther King Jr. said, redistribute the pain. You know, so when the minister says it, you know, it's like, well, what did he just say? It's like, hold up. Your man, the one that y'all feel more comfortable agreeing with and recognizing, Martin Luther King said it, but you forgot to say that part. You forgot to talk about, yeah, I'm the Muslim, but he's the one that said we need to boycott Christmas. You know,
come on.
He said, I'm bringing up your man's words, not my words. I'm just echoing my brother. And when you start to hear that, then you's like, hold up, what man did y'all tell me about that I didn't know about? And that's the beauty of the Honorable Minister Louis Farr. He don't throw out people away. He brings out the best and shows who they are. And it's very interesting, Brother Mitra brought it up and told the year of when Dr. King met the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the same year that they said, hold up, because they had been wanting and planning to kill him. But why did they kill in that year? And that's very significant that the meeting was in that year and they killed him in that year because we already know there was wiretapping him everywhere he went. So they heard something in that conversation that they haven't released the files on. But even if they didn't hear anything, just the fact that he was lending his ear to the most powerful black man that they knew in the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if that union would have ever been allowed to take place, then the words that Martin Luther King Jr. was saying would have had taken real effect because, you know, he would have taken real effect. And it's interesting when we talk about this picture because Brother Lewis down in Atlanta, he always texts me different stuff while I was on the show. He said he was at the King Center or he was at a meeting with Dr. King's daughter, Sister Bernice, and he showed her the pic of her father in the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he said that she had never seen that picture.
Wow.
And she runs the King Center. And she runs the King Center. And the thing is, if our people would know that, yes, Martin Luther King sat down and had a conversation, not like he just had with Malcolm, but the teacher, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that sets a different precedent, that sets a different history, that sets a whole different conversation that the enemy don't want that image out there. And it's very funny because I was scrolling as you were talking, and I see a brother named Imam Earl Abdul-Malik Muhammad, and he's going to do this Martin Luther King holiday weekend speech, and he's from the Muslim American Leader. He's going to actually, his flyer and his video of his speech has the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says freedom, justice, and equality, and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad with Dr. King together. So it's very interesting that people might actually start waking up.
You know, both of you all are sharing such powerful insight, and you made me to reflect upon, Minister Ava, pardon me, the work of the minister of helping us to see properly all of those that have labored and struggled on our behalf. And I was looking at a document that he gave to us, Minister Ava, and it was a document called The Synthesis, The Evolution of Thinking. And this document from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan includes some of the last words of different civil rights leaders, different leaders of our people.
Yeah.
And the minister helped us to see that at the end of their lives, they had all come into agreement. But we have never shown these kinds of statements. So he has here from Dr. King. He said, Dr. King said, I've come to the realization that I think we may be integrating into a burning house. This is what Dr. King said to Harry Belafonte. In another place, Dr. King ultimately found that, quote, integration ended up as merely adding color to a still predominantly white power structure. He conceded there are points. Now, just think about this and how Hoover saw Dr. King being disqualified from being the Black Messiah because he was beholden to white liberal doctrine. Contrast that with this statement. Dr. King conceded, there are points at which I see the necessity for temporary separation as a temporary way station to a truly integrated society. Now, I know Minister Ava can make use of this quote because she's doing town halls on separation all over the country, in person and virtually, and hear the king of integration, the prince of integration.
Come on,
the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is verbalizing that, you know what, man, maybe Elijah Muhammad and them are on to something. Because, yeah, maybe we want to be integrated, but we can't be integrated unless we're separated first. He didn't say segregation. He said separation. You see? So, again, to the minister's point, his mind is evolving. I mean, and I don't, you know, I think all of us that's speaking on this line tonight are older than 39 years of age. So,
that's right. Yes, sir. That's right.
Think of Dr. King.
He was killed at 39.
39.
Listen.
He had not fully become the man that he was destined to become.
My
so we could even apportion his allegiance to integration to a youthful flirtation.
Come on.
We don't know what the mature Dr. King would have become wedded to. All indicators point that he would have married the ideas that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was helping him to see. And again, see, this hidden history thing is so profound. You know, we did a report that was called Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a black Muslim. And of course, you know, it intentionally has an eyebrow raising title because we wanted to show, and I think we have maybe about 14 different points of hidden history that bring the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. into an eye-opening unity. And many people may be surprised to learn, just as an example, is that when Dr. King was a seminary student at Crozier Theological Seminary, he actually writes a research report on the pagan origins of Christmas.
Come on, come on.
Wow.
And not only does he out Christmas as a pagan holiday, but he begins to talk about the commercialism and the consumerism that is bottled up inside of it. Kind of sounds like, you know, up with Jesus, down with Santa, you know, that you've also seen on the cover of the Final Call from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So imagine a private conversation with these two men who have a better than average knowledge of not just the scriptures, but of the history of religion. See, these two men had a very strong foundation for building one of the most revolutionary brotherhoods that I think the powers that be in America were so frightened at the potential of what it could have become that they determined that Dr. King and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because the Muhammad speaks during this period of time, also headlined attempts on the life of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
So, yes, sir.
Just to be clear, it wasn't that the enemy feared Dr. King, you know, more than it feared the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Dr. King was easier to get to. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was very difficult for the enemy to get to, but they were still trying to assassinate both the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I just thank Allah that, as Minister Ava pointed out, you know, being initially baptized into the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we didn't really see Dr. King the way we see him now. And
that's exactly right.
I think it goes to the heart of the minister. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember the day after Minister Farrakhan and Dr. Betty Shabazz had this historic coming together at the Apollo Theater. The minister spoke the next day at Mosque Number 7. And the minister said that the media was calling him from all over the country, saying that what he had achieved the night before at the Apollo with Betty Shabazz was a stroke of political genius. And because he's not a Negro, the minister was highly offended. He said to call this the work of political genius denies the quality of my heart.
That's right.
In other words, you want to say that this is a contrivance. You want to say that this is the result of some strategy to win in the court of public opinion.
Come on.
Instead of recognizing I'm not the man that you have said that I am. I'm the opposite of the man you tried to make the whole world believe that I am. I'm a sincere man, motivated not out of hatred, but motivated out of love and a sincere concern for all of our people. So the minister has made us to love Dr. King.
Yes.
The minister has made us to love the black church. The minister has made us to see the value of all who have struggled. They may not have been Islamic. They may not have even had a favorable view of the nation. But the minister, as we are taught, he has made us to settle on the best part of them. And this should be the way we move forward as a people, to, as you pointed out, Minister Ava, in the example of the minister, we can reconcile all of the ideological differences of the nationalists, the Pan-Africanists, the Christians, the Muslims, the Panthers. The minister has shown us, he's demonstrated how to reconcile all of those differences, appreciate the good that everybody brings to the table without compromising the platform that we individually stand on. And I just thank Almighty God Allah because he has truly given us the example that any of us who work among our people, and if you want longevity, you better take Farrakhan's pedagogy on, because otherwise you won't be able to labor in a vineyard that the enemy has so thoroughly poisoned.
Well said. Beautifully said. Well, listen, let's go to the song. This is phenomenal. Phenomenal. And let's start with, we'll just go right down the board. Brother Daryl, assalamu alaikum. Brother Daryl? All right. You may have us on mute. We'll come back to you, sir. Let's keep it moving. This is phenomenal. Sister Ula. Sister Ula?
Oh, Lord, you better start talking quick or we're going to go to the next one.
I hope I'm not having a connection problem.
No, I just thought I heard some snoring in the background.
I did too. Okay, I hope this isn't a connection problem. Two in a row. Brother Hoyle out of Memphis.
Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, sir.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum my fellow hard hitter from Memphis, Demetrius. How you doing, soldier?
I'm great, Brother Hoyo. How are you, sir?
All praises due to Allah, brother. You're doing an excellent job with the national spokesman, Sister Ava, and Brother Terrence, and Sister Pamela, and beautiful. I wanted, and Brother Demetrius, hitting on the point of, you know, also not only when the minister mentioned the, you know, Dr. King talking about separation, you know, when he talked about field tests and all that in one of his lectures, his last lectures, he also was targeted because of the his stance on the Vietnam War too. And I was reading an article, Sister Betty Shabazz was, when she was living, she said if Dr. King was living, you know, they were making a comparison and how Minister Farrakhan and Dr. King, you know, their works are the same, you know. And that not only, you know, because I remember a lecture, Brother Demetrius, in Theology of Time, where Dr. King talked about his meetings with, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talked about his meetings with Dr. King and how the government agents, every time he left the palace, you know, there were government agent cars, you know, sitting all over different places. They were clicking. You could hear cameras clicking and all of that. So they knew. And, you know, if you look at the evidence of the assassination, and, there, you know, there's talk about how he was smothered in the hospital and you know, just all kinds of, you know, evidence. Just like Malcolm, you know, they won't open the files and, you know, they got them closed, but we know that this, you know, this is a conspiracy. But touch on that, Brother Demetrius, about the Vietnam War, if you can. You got some information on that. I'll let somebody else talk. Thank you, brother, and good show. All praise is due to Allah.
Thank you. All praise is due to Allah. That's one of the great areas where Sister Anissa covers in her wonderful article in this week's edition, speaking about Dr. King's stance against the war in Vietnam and the backlash she received from the media, the backlash she received from black leaders. In reading her article, she interviewed Tavis Smiley, and he wrote a book about the last year of Dr. King's life. And Tavis made mention of the fact that the speech that really got Dr. King into trouble with mainstream folk was his speech at Riverside Baptist Church in 1967, April 4th, same day he was assassinated the following year. And he said that Dr. King did something unusual and that he printed the text of his speech and gave it out to the media in its entirety that they might have his exact quotes and, you know, they would have no legitimate reason to misquote him. And he goes on to talk about how the media, you know, even having his full statement, the context and everything, they attacked and ripped Dr. King to shreds the following day in their coverage. And essentially, many in the black community, as well as those in the white power structure, felt that Dr. King was out of his place. You know, white people in their paternalistic attitude toward black people, they see us as their children, and that, you know, if we are operating in an arena that they have not approved for us, we are subject to receive their condemnation as being out of place. And so who is this uppity nigger, quote unquote, who's meddling in America's foreign affairs? You know, why is he trying to conflate or to connect America's problems abroad with America's problems at home, the problem of poverty, the problem between the races? So papers like the New York Times and other so-called liberal organs, you know, they raked Dr. King over the coals. He had to suffer having invitations even to speak at colleges and at black churches rescinded as a result of his stance against the war in Vietnam. Now, again, for us, this is another point of unity with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because in the early 1940s, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke out against the World War II, the war against between America and Japan. And it was because of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad's strong stance against the war with Japan that he was arrested by Franklin Delano Roosevelt under executive authority. He took the Honorable Elijah Muhammad off the streets. And similarly, Dr. King had within his critique that the war effort in Vietnam was literally a deception against the poor. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was saying the same thing. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said we should not send our black sons and daughters into foreign theaters of war to fight for the rulers of America. We were being deceived, essentially. And so this position to stand against America, and at this time, this was really the genesis of what they called a military-industrial complex, this nebulous union between politicians, weapons manufacturers, banks, lobbyists, powerful moneyed interests, who would have saw Dr. King's speech as interfering with any willingness on the part of poor black, brown, red, yellow, and white to join America in the war effort, you see. So Dr. King stood, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad stood. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was also against the war in Vietnam. But his stance against America's war effort began in the 40s when Dr. King's was beginning in the 60s. But the point being is that this was an area of commonality between both men. And it helps us to see their love for our people. Because to say that you're going to stand in opposition to the most powerful government in the world just so you can help your people save their lives from being duped into joining a war effort, that's very, very courageous. And the scripture makes us to know that courage and bravery is not so much of an intellectual result. But courage and bravery is the fruit of a deep and a profound love. As the Bible puts it like this, perfect love casts out fear. In other words, if you want to produce courageous men and women, you have to first instill love in them. And Dr. King and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in this courageous stance against the U.S. government, were demonstrating a profound love for our people.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Praise be to Allah. Well, we've got Brother Daryl calling back in. Looks like he's calling on two different phones, so he's anxious to get in. Brother Daryl, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Praise be to Allah.
Welcome.
Yeah, I was having problems with my phone. When I touched it, it must have put it on mute. I just want to thank you for your show. May Allah continue to bless you as well, and Brother Tans and Sister Rona. When Brother was speaking about Martin Luther King, is when he did speak out towards the Vietnam War is when the problems really got, you know, geared up. They assassinated him, even though they was trying to take down Elijah Muhammad out as well when he was in Mercy Hospital. But what I like about it, they constantly play the same song over and over. When we was coming up, hearing the song, you know, We Shall Overcome, and I noticed as we got older, the same song is constantly being played, but they never act like Martin Luther King had other speeches until the minister brought it up and spoke out about what he spoke about. He may be sending our people into a burning house, and then he spoke out about the war. So that's what really fired up everybody to pay attention when the minister spoke about it. And one other thing is that we just lost another brother in Nashville. He was shot and killed. It's just this killing just getting worse and worse. But I don't understand why we can't understand this virus is really getting out of control. They had just opened up a school, and Biden is study talking he's going to put out about 3 million vaccines that is safe for the children to take it. And people saying we're not going for 90, talking about all of the factories saying we're going to shut it down by striking because we're not going to take this virus. So if we come together in this unity and what you're doing about separation, it's going to happen because our people are waking up. Yes, it's going to fulfill scripture, those going to tell God, I call and they just came, you know, and that fear, you know, of their job and school and everything. So our people are running and taking these shots like it's going to save them, and it's not. It's going to make it worse and worse. So we just have to understand separation is the first and only solution that we have to do for us to get away from this virus, because if we don't continue and do what the minister asks us and asks our law to protect us and, you know, and surrender and ask him for forgiveness, ain't no vaccine out here and nothing that they're going to be able to do to prevent this. Like the minister said, you got it's come from heaven. Then he had to clear that up of the spookism came from the wheel, you know. So I love and appreciate your show, and I thank Allah for you having me on the show, because we more we come in and listen to what's going on, we don't really find out nothing until we come on your show. And when Brother Terrence talk about what's going on in the guests of our brothers that's coming on, other than that, our people is lost. So this thing is definitely going worldwide of your show. And I got people coming on listening, and they're glad that they're coming on because they're getting things that they never heard until they come on your show, because you're telling on the doctor truth through what the minister's saying and what's coming through the final call. So I appreciate and thank you all. Love you and Happy New Year. And you all stay safe. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Wa alaykum salam. We love you too. We love you too. You know, I love that this little program is a sort of a central station for the brilliance and commitment that is in our nation. This discussion tonight and Student Minister Dimitri's insight has been priceless. You can't even put a dollar value on this type of knowledge and wisdom and the understanding that comes from it. And, you know, it's something how everything is interconnected with everything else. There's a very good, not good, it's a powerful article in the Farrakhan the Traveler series, this same issue, where Minister Jibril Muhammad writes, let me see if I can find, well, I'm sorry, I got to find it. Ooh, I lost it. Oh, okay, here it is. It goes back to what's been said all night, starting with you, Brother Dimitri, and Brother Terrence and I joining in, and other aspects of his character we've all witnessed. But this is what Brother Jibril writes about Minister Farrakhan after going into some excerpts from the study guides. He said, Minister Farrakhan wants for us what the Mahdi and the Messiah want for us. Now, this was written in 2003. He said, The above should be seen in the context of these relevant words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But in saying this man wants what Allah, God, and his Christ want for us, and that's why
right.
he's operating at the next level, and he's constantly pulling us up to and into the thinking of Allah, and it's aiding us in seeing each other properly. So he says, Master Fard Muhammad aims to raise the lost found so-called Negro into the knowledge and wisdom, the very ideas of the gods of the past. He aims presently to raise his people into his own. He aims not only to reveal his ideas for the present creation of the universe, but to give to man the nature and the creative wisdom to produce creative ideas as father of civilization. This is what was prophesied, that God would make a man like himself. He aims to make the nation of righteousness who will rule in the hereafter with the potential knowledge of producing and bringing into action or existence that which he has been able to produce. We call this ideas. He aims to make each one into a god. And I was just blown with that because it's a perfect expression of what I was stumbling over earlier about nationalism and the low, petty level that we have been functioning on until we came into the light of this man's leadership, because he's talking about nation of righteousness. It's all about at the end, it's about truth and falsehood. And it goes back to what you were saying, Brother Dimitri, about Dr. Betty Shabazz and the Million Man March and people seeing the things the minister does as some sort of brilliant strategy or tactic.
Right.
Or
right,
marketing.
Right.
You know, some
scheme. Right.
And it's just, it's, you know, when you love God and you're connected to the possessor of power over all things, You stand up and say there's death in the vaccine.
Right. That's right.
You know, and you say that not knowing what exactly is in it.
Come
but
on.
6 months later, it all gets revealed. You're not even worried about it. Because you're getting this from the Lord of the world.
That's
but
right.
I just got excited. Yes, sir.
No, and I'm glad you got excited because there's 2 points that there's one that when Brother Demetrius hit on the love of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and it's also the last piece that you said about what he said in the criterion that I meant to bring up this week. The first part is the love of Minister Farrakhan, and we have all seen that. And I love how Brother Demetrius said what he said. Is that the minister, I don't know, sometimes we who are witness bearers have to testify more of his love. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan causes me to love those in leadership. So when a Jesse comes in town, or Al Sharpton come in town, the minister hasn't condemned that. Every time I see him around them, he shows love, so I'm going to show you love. Because as you just read, Dr. Ava, because he has aim in which he wants to bring all of us up, but he also settles on the best part of us. So I've never seen the minister say anything bad about Jesse Jackson. Yeah, you know we've all heard things said about him, but we know
that's
the minister
right.
loves his brother. He loves
that's
him
right.
and he honors him, and he thanks him for all of the work that he has done for black people. And I know when I was with Reverend Barber, we was at the Aretha Franklin, and he went to T.D. Jakes, and he was just so happy to see T.D. Jakes. He was so happy, and I saw him with Reverend Barber,
and hugging Reverend Barber, and then even telling me, say, I wanted to jump and shout like Reverend Barber too, but I maintain his discipline because he loves us. I mean, it's a genuine love, and he loves to see the greatness. I've seen him see it in young people when he was on college tours. I've seen him just get joy when he's around our artists and the rappers, and the joy that he has. He has genuine love, and he wants to see the best of us, as you said, Dr. Ava. He wants to see a nation of righteousness, and that transcends, as you said, the nationally. Oh, y'all the nation. Oh, no. He doesn't say that. When he goes to the church, when he says, this is my pastor, he really means that because he learns from everyone. He learns literally and sits and drinks from people that he sits and talks to. He'll let you talk for hours before he even responds. The minister is that in love with us. And the other piece of that I close on is this. I wanted to bring up the fact of what you said, Dr. Ava. He said, the minister said is, however you just said, the death reports in the vaccine, and then later we come to find out. What you were really saying to us, and those that believe and those that will come to believe, we have to know who he is. In other words, stop going to the world to say, well, I don't know if the minister's correct or if he's right, because scientists say the world said this and researchers said that the doctor. I don't give a damn about all of that. We know that he is the voice of God. He is the messenger of God, the Messiah in our midst. And when you know that, you got to know that, Dr. A, because when you just believe and you think he is, then you will doubt and follow in suspicion. You won't do what he says. I always tell people, what's your position on the vaccine? My first position on the vaccine is Minister Farrakhan told me not to take it, period. I ain't even got to go no farther than that. I will entertain you with the Final Call newspaper and some other articles to show you for your information. But for me in my house, all that I know is that the Lord of the world spoke through him and told me what to do. That's it.
That's right.
And if you don't believe that he is the Son of Man, the Messiah, God's voice, then you will not follow. There's nothing else. If you believe in God and you say you follow God, then when God speaks, what else you need to hear? Who else you need to hear from? Is there a higher authority or more correct person in science than God? And I think I'm just saying that for those who say we believe. Stop trying to figure out what he means and what he doesn't know. He is directed. And God.
Exactly. That's right.
That's right. That's right. That's
right. And see, that language that he wants, what the God wants, and look at how the God sees us. We're all the sheep. We're the lost found.
Right.
Members. If you look at our Constitution, who are we? We are the lost found members of the Nation of Islam in the West. It's immaterial to him what our little manifestations are on our level.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
He loves Dr. King. He loves Jesse Jackson. He loves of the sheep. Okay, he's the shepherd. And now the minister is in the role of the good shepherd. And look at
That's
the
right.
minister's words in the same article. He said, I'm not putting us down. I'm trying to lift us all up. I want us to have peace. I want peace to be in the hearts of believers for believers. Peace to be in the hearts of our people. I want the peace of God to descend on each one of us like a dove. Because in that peace is the spirit and power of God. That's what I want for you.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Enough said. That's beautiful, yeah.
No, this is rich, and I have to say that you know, the minister's work, the minister's role, I think it's so critical for us to appreciate. We did a subject a few weeks ago entitled The Confirmation of the Revelation. And one of the things that we looked at was that, you know, even though we're living in a period of time that concerns many people, and there are both national and personal challenges that have touched the lives of all of us, this is, as the scripture says, not only a dreadful day, but a great day. And one of the things that I notice is that, as Minister Ava pointed out, the minister talked to us about this vaccine and about the plan and the thinking of the enemy 6 months or more before the enemy made his plans public. And over and over and over again, what the minister said during the criterion has been borne witness to in the developments of the day. Mm-hmm. Now, as Minister Ava put it, the ministers didn't go and research and, you know, look at what they're going to put in a vaccine and do a whole bunch of, you know, medical research or what have you before he said what he said July 4th, 2020. He received it as a revealed message from Allah.
There it is.
And he spoke.
Period. That's it. Come on.
Now, you know, we believe in it. As they say in the Quran, we believe in it. It is all from our Lord.
Right. Come on.
But the beautiful thing about revelation is that when revelation is given, the support for the revelation, it doesn't exist yet. So you
are
called a believer because you believe it. Come on. But now, one of the blessings that Allah gives to the steadfast believer is the confirmation of their faith in the revelation. In other words, and I believing in it before the proof came.
That's right.
Allah blesses us by confirming it for us over and over and over again. And this is exactly the role that the minister plays in the life of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. In the Holy Quran, Surah 28, Ayat 34 and 35, Musa prays to Allah to give him Aaron as a helper. In the English translation of the Quran, he says, "Give me Aaron, my brother, as a helper. He's more eloquent than me, to confirm me, for I fear that the people won't believe me." Aaron then has as his primary function in the life of his teacher, his brother, the messenger of Allah, the man that God spoke to face to face, his job is to confirm what God revealed to that man. So he's the man who brings the evidence and the proof. Now look at July 4th, 2020 and everything that's happened since then. And not just on COVID and the vaccine, but while everybody's been trying to get a grip of what's going on with COVID and the vaccine, mandate, sicknesses, testing, all of that, Allah exonerated the Nation of Islam in the assassination of Malcolm X.
That's
Allah
right.
caused the Pentagon to finally tell the American public, well, we know for so many years we told you it was swamp gas and weather balloons, but we want to finally admit to you guys that there's a power above our heads and we don't know what it is. It's threatened us existentially. It's taken our nuclear arsenal offline. They do exist. We're finally going to admit they do exist, these UFOs. This, that, the whole world mocked Honorable Elijah Muhammad about. They mocked the messenger. They mocked the believers prior to 75. And they mocked the minister, and they mocked us since 75. Now they are finally admitting the Muslims didn't kill Malcolm X, and guess what? UFOs do exist. So look at, in the midst of turmoil and pain and suffering, even that's coming to the nation, Allah,
that's right,
pan back for a moment and see he's confirming what we believe.
That's right.
That, to me, is the sign that we have to hold on.
Woo.
You see, because he's confirming revelation even in the midst of the fall of this world. And so the minister's role then is just so critical, because he just speaks it. And then Allah arranges forces. And how does he say it in the study guide, Minister Ava? He said Allah says be, and it is. But when he says be, he summons the power of his own being, and he arranges forces and resources to bring about the fruition of his will.
Come on.
I say to any of those, you won't live to see Farrakhan's word fail. God is not mocked. You
That's
don't
right.
get to prove
right.
the prophets and messengers to be liars. You see, and over and over again, the minister's word is being confirmed. So it's worthy to rejoice and be glad about.
Woo! What a way, Dr.
When
to that end hour.
This is
oh,
fun.
Wow,
no,
it
I'm
is.
Just,
we're
I'm
almost at the hour.
So cool.
I'm so sorry.
This is why.
No.
I thought we wanted to take more calls.
We're going to get one more, but this is why this is called the life-giving teachings.
That's right.
This fills you with life. Woo, I love that.
Oh, praise due to Allah.
Let's see, we have Sister Darcelle who's been waiting out of the Carolinas, our dear sister. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Darcelle. We're down to 2 minutes. We're sorry.
Okay, alaikum salam.
We've heard the best sermon we've heard all week.
Beautiful message, beautiful message. I love giving flowers when you're living. Thank you, Brother Terrence. And just a beautiful thing, and to the whole staff of Elevated Places, I appreciate you, and I want to give you special roses and violets for the work that you do, and happy Founders Day to our sister sorors that are out there, and thank you so much, and thank you for mentioning Sydney Poitier. That was so important.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You so much. Love
yes,
you all,
ma'am.
And may Allah be with all of us. Peace.
Oh, thank you, beloved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alaykum
salam. All right, perfect. From alaykum. It's a perfect, beautiful ending. We're down to about just about enough time for acknowledgement. You know, Brother Demetric, there are no words on behalf of myself and the team and the listeners. I mean, I could listen to you another 2 hours. Oh, man.
Oh, praise due to Allah.
I would listen to you on a Sunday. That would be the whole world.
Due to Allah.
But we thank you for taking the time to be with us. And in 2022, we have to have you much more often. We love you so much. Brother Terrence, my co-host, there are no words. You are just extraordinary. And Allah willing, we'll just keep rolling through 2022. We are the winners. We are
That's right.
the winners. And as Brother just beautifully confirmed again, the Nation of Islam. Oh, my God. Sister Rona Muhammad, our executive producer, brilliant project manager, and it's just woman extraordinaire, sister, attorney Pamela Muhammad, our legal contributor and host of A Time for Justice, and of course all of the listeners who gather on Thursday nights to listen, and those who call in to weigh in. Thank you all so much. May Allah bless us all with love, safety, and the light of understanding. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.